This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Today, Michael Cohen, President Trump's former attorney and longtime fixer, testifies before the House Oversight Committee just months before he begins serving a three-year prison sentence.
I am ashamed that I chose to take part in concealing Mr. Trump's illicit acts rather than listening to my own conscience.
In his opening remarks, Cohen calls the president
racist, he is a con man, and he is a cheat. Mr. Trump knew of and directed the Trump-Moscow negotiations. Mr. Trump is a racist. Mr. Trump would often say, this campaign was going to be the greatest infomercial in political history. Within a couple of days, there would be a massive dump of emails that would damage Hillary Clinton's campaign. Mr. Trump responded by stating to the effect, wouldn't that be great? Says to me something to the effect of, don't worry, Michael, your January and February reimbursement checks are coming. I have been smeared as a rat. Directed me to threaten his high school, his colleges, and the college board to never release his grades. Individual number one is President Donald J. Trump.
Ilya Marritz has been watching the testimony from here in New York City, and he's a reporter for WNYC and co-host of the Trump Inc. podcast. Ilya, thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be here.
This is the day. So, Ilya, what are some of the broad patterns that we're seeing in the questions today? Because I feel like there are two strategies that we're seeing emerge, one from the Democrats, one from the Republicans. We'll start with the Democrats. They seem to be trying to paint Donald Trump as the villain.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of different directions, and we keep kind of looping back to those. But, you know, at the center of it all is Donald Trump's judgment, Donald Trump's potential legal exposure, what other parties might have on Donald Trump, and really trying to understand his motivations, how he ran his company. With the Republicans, there's been a lot of talk about Lanny Davis, a lot of talk about a potential book deal. Justin Amash, I think, has been the only one so far that's really had substantive questions about Donald Trump
himself.
And that's really telling because none of the Republicans are out there really defending the president around the things that Cohen is saying. They're simply trying to ding his credibility. And for the most part, he's saying, look, I pleaded to the stuff. I'm going to jail for a substantial amount of time. But if you would like, I can talk to you about what I know about Donald Trump, who I worked for 10 years.
It would be no different if I said, that's the nicest looking tie I've ever seen, isn't it? What are you going to do? You're going to fight with him? The answer is no. So you say, yeah, it's the nicest looking tie I've ever seen. That's how he speaks. He doesn't give you questions. He doesn't give you orders. He speaks in a code. And I understand the code because I've been around him for a decade.
I wanted to add one of the really interesting points that emerged in the last hour or so of testimony had to do with Cohen's earlier prepared testimony to Congress, which he wrote with his lawyer and then shared with Donald Trump's lawyers. And according to Cohen, they edited his testimony.
There were changes made, additions, Jay Sekulow for one.
Were there changes about the timing? The question of
gentlemen's time has expired. You may answer that question.
There were several changes that were made, including how we were going to handle that message,
were you finished?
Yes. The message, of course, being the length of time that the Trump Tower Moscow project stayed and remained alive.
That opens up a lot of very surprising possibilities, especially if the edits that they suggested were some kind of cover up or if they were inserting lies. Now, Cohen has already said that his testimony was false and he's going to jail for the false testimony. Nevertheless, if Donald Trump's, if the U.S. president's lawyers were making Cohen's testimony more false than it already was, that's really a thing. That's like a whole new area of legal exposure that we have hardly begun to contemplate.
It's we're on air, so people can't see our eyes sort of like bulging, but I'm just thinking like this is really crazy. Let's talk a little bit about some of the actual back and forth. Earlier today, we saw Democratic Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida ask Cohen specifically about the connection between Trump and the Trump family and Russia. Let's take a listen.
If Mr. Trump and his daughter Ivanka and son Donald Jr. are involved in the Russian Trump Tower deal, Is it possible the whole family is conflicted or compromised with a foreign adversary in the months before the election?
Yes.
Ilya.
Yeah, I think the person who might have the most headaches coming out of this is Donald Trump Jr., because he has already given sworn testimony around this stuff. And so if he perjured himself, if Michael Cohen is telling the truth that Donald Trump Jr. was repeatedly briefed on this and very involved, and if Donald Trump Jr. said something contrary to that to law enforcement or to the Congress, that creates a lot of problems for Donald Trump Jr. That moment was also very... had a lot of built-in drama for people who have been watching this for a while, because Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course, was the chair of the DNC. Her emails were among those that were hacked. She was actually forced to step down, I believe, during the Democratic convention in 2016. And you could hear a little tremor in her voice during that questioning as she was kind of homing in on those issues.
So we also heard Democratic Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy of Illinois ask Michael Cohen about the last time he had contact with Donald Trump and one of his associates. Let's take a listen.
Unfortunately, this topic is actually something that's being investigated right now by the Southern District of New York. And I've been asked by them not to discuss and not to talk about these issues.
Fair enough. Is there any other wrongdoing or illegal act that you are aware of regarding Donald Trump that we haven't yet discussed today?
Yes, and again, those are part of the investigation that's currently being looked at by the Southern District of New York.
Any sense, Ilya, what Cohen could be referring to there?
It's going to be really hard for the headline writers to pick a headline out of these hearings, but I think this might be the best one. We did not know that the Southern District was apparently investigating the president. We don't know what the contents of it are, but there is a clue here, because Congressman Krishnamoorthy had asked about Cohen's last communication with Donald Trump, when it took place and what it was about. And Cohen, I think, said it was late summer of 2018. The years are blending together, but that he's been asked not to discuss it because it's subject of an ongoing investigation. And Cohen is cooperating on an ongoing basis with Southern District prosecutors. Interestingly, if his cooperation is fruitful, Cohen may be eligible for some kind of sentencing reduction. We don't know that much about it, and a lot of that hinges on whether Cohen's information is good and whether it leads somewhere, but he does have an incentive to talk.
Ilya Marritz is a reporter for WNYC and co-host of the Trump Inc. podcast. Thank you for being with us again.
Thanks so much.
Mr. Cohen, you called Donald Trump a cheat in your opening testimony. What would you call yourself?
A fool. I am a non-government employee. It was not lobbying, and they are not...
This has nothing to do with lobbying.
How many times did Mr. Trump ask you to threaten an individual or entity on his behalf?
Quite a few times.
50 times?
More.
100 times?
More.
200 times?
More.
500 times?
Probably.
Did you not wiretap President Trump without his knowledge?
I did record Mr. Trump in a conversation, yes.
You don't know truth from falsehood.
I'm responsible for your silliness because I did the same thing that you're doing now for 10 years. I protected Mr. Trump for 10 years.
Now we turn to two more people who've been following Michael Cohen's trajectory alongside President Trump. Amy Sabrin is a former defense attorney at Skadden Arps, where she represented many public officials and executives in Department of Justice investigations and congressional investigations. And Rebecca Davis O'Brien is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal.
I was struck by his description of the president, broadly speaking. This is somebody who once said he would take a bullet for the president, who's now sort of in very vivid strokes describing him as a liar, a racist, sort of an inveterate crook who he says he regretted following for so long.
There are three major takeaways. One, Cohen says Trump conspired to violate campaign finance laws and provides evidence of that.
I am providing the committee today with several documents, and these include a copy of a check Mr. Trump wrote from his personal bank account after he became president to reimburse me for the hush money payments I made to cover up his affair with an adult film star and to prevent damage to his campaign.
2, Trump knew of Russia's efforts to hack into Hillary Clinton's and DNC emails and encouraged it.
Days before the Democratic convention, I was in Mr. Trump's office when his secretary announced that Roger Stone was on the phone. Mr. Trump put Mr. Stone on the speakerphone. Mr. Stone told Mr. Trump that he had just gotten off the phone with Julian Assange, and that Mr. Assange told Mr. Stone that within a couple of days, there would be a massive dump of emails that would damage Hillary Clinton's campaign. Mr. Trump responded by stating to the effect, "Wouldn't that be great?"
And 3, Trump lied about Russia and his Moscow project throughout the campaign, so Cohen did too.
Mr. Trump knew of and directed the Trump-Moscow negotiations throughout the campaign and lied about it. He lied about it because he never expected to win.
What does that tell us, Amy?
Well, it tells us that Trump lied to the American people throughout the campaign, if Cohen is to be believed. I presume that he's not the only one who has evidence of this. And it also raises questions about Trump's role in the lies that Mr. Cohen made to Congress when he first testified. And it doesn't directly implicate the president in directing Cohen to lie about those negotiations. But he said that he ran his testimony, his written testimony, by Trump's personal lawyers. And the implication there is that either they knew he was lying or that they ran it past Trump and Trump approved it. But he doesn't provide direct evidence that Trump directed him to lie in that testimony.
And Amy, you said if he is to be believed, and I think that's a huge question today. This is someone who admits to having lied in the past. Is there something that we should be looking for that will say this is the moment we can believe Michael Cohen?
Well, first of all, he's bringing some corroborating documentary evidence. Second of all, he wouldn't have reason to testify falsely today. He has every incentive to testify truthfully because he could face more jail time if he lies, and I'm sure his lawyers have made that clear to him. And third of all, Cohen's willing to answer any questions thrown toward him and to experience withering cross-examination from the Republicans under penalty of perjury, which is more than you can say for President Trump.
There's another issue here. Cohen says that Donald Trump also knew when he was a presidential candidate that Roger Stone, and we'll get into the details of Roger Stone later in the show, was talking to Julian Assange about the WikiLeaks drop of DNC emails. Is that a direct implication, Amy?
That, again, is circumstantial evidence of conspiring in the DNC email hacks, but it's not direct evidence, and it doesn't tie him directly. He knows someone else is doing it. Cohen says he encouraged it, but again, it's not the smoking gun.
I want to pivot for a little bit, Amy. Yesterday evening, Representative Matt Gaetz from Florida tweeted out, and I'm quoting here, "Hey, at Michael Cohen 212, do your wife and father-in-law know about your girlfriends? Maybe tonight would be a good time for that chat." And he goes on and on to ask him about, you know, whether or not she'll remain faithful when you're in prison. You know, is this witness intimidation, Amy? And if it is, what should Congress do about it?
Well, it could be something that Congress wants to take disciplinary action in connection with. You know, if Congressman Gaetz had left that message on Cohen's private voicemail, you might say it was closer to witness intimidation. The fact that he does it publicly raises a question about that. Also, you have to remember that members of Congress have immunity from criminal prosecution. It's called the Speech or Debate Clause. It's in the Constitution for conduct conducted while in connection with their official duties. There's a question that's never been resolved whether tweeting or, you know, is within their official duties, but he could be immune from prosecution, even if it is witness tampering.
Rebecca, let's take a step back and talk about a little bit more about the relationship between these two men, Trump and Cohen. How far back does their relationship go?
Well, we know that Michael Cohen started working for Donald Trump approximately a decade ago at Trump Organization and took on different roles, but most recently served as the president's personal lawyer. Michael Cohen seems to be the person to whom he turned for assistance on the side of, you know, legal assistance. He was an enforcer type for him, a fixer.
I'm talking about a man who declares himself brilliant, but directed me to threaten his high school, his colleges, and the college board to never release his grades or SAT scores.
Look, I cover white-collar law enforcement, and there are times when people who work on behalf of very powerful people do kind of bully their way around. It's not unusual to that dynamic. It's, as Michael Cohen points out, it's a little ironic because at the time then Donald Trump was criticizing President Obama for being, you know, lazy student or a bad student. So he's a bully on behalf of, he was a bully, and he, I think he acknowledges that.
Sitting here today, it seems unbelievable that I was so mesmerized by Donald Trump that I was willing to do things for him that I knew were absolutely wrong.
And he feels bad that he played that role.
We're now seeing a very contrite Mr. Cohen, and I'd love to ask both of you, why do you think Michael Cohen flipped the script? Rebecca.
We wrote about that a little bit last year. One thing that happened right after, in April, you guys recall, it feels like a zillion years ago, there was this FBI raid of his hotel, home, and office. And that really just blew this investigation by the Southern District of New York into the open. And as soon as it became apparent that he was under criminal investigation, of course, the contours of that investigation weren't known yet, a divide immediately emerged. I think there were already strains there. We've reported that one reason he pleaded guilty was that his family was being threatened with some legal exposure in connection with his personal businesses and their applications to banks. He has professed to be, you know, particularly close to his family, and he's protective of them and feels like they've been threatened.
As my father said countless times throughout my childhood, you, my wife, and you, my children, are the air that I breathe. So to my Laura and to my Sammy and to my Jake, there's nothing I wouldn't do to protect you.
I also think that, you know, Trump's legal team sort of pushed him away. I don't think they felt like embracing him. They kind of left him out in the cold, and that was a strategy.
Amy, and of course, depending on who you ask, Michael Cohen's guilty plea was either proof of collusion or evidence of the president's innocence. Amy, what does the case against Cohen and the fact that ultimately he is going to jail actually tell us?
Well, most of the reason he's going to jail is five counts of personal income tax evasion. So it tells us that he has been dishonest in many of his dealings in the past. But he, as he put it, he is going to jail for felonies that he committed for the benefit of and at the direction of and in coordination with individual one, who he makes clear is President Donald J. Trump.
Amy, you talked about Michael Cohen, and I'm wondering if the information that he provided to Bob Mueller would actually get him a reduced sentence here in the Southern District of New York. How does the district court see this?
Well, I think he's already been sentenced. I think he got 3 years on the charges that the Southern District of New York brought against him. And he got 30 days, I believe, for lying to Congress to be served concurrently with those 3 years. So there was a little bit of a difference between how he was viewed by Mueller's team and how he was viewed by the Southern District in terms of his level of cooperation.
And I'm wondering, Rebecca, even, you know, with Cohen's help with the special counsel, the Southern District of New York doesn't seem pretty impressed with this. They've called it modest. His help is modest. They've also recommended, quote, a substantial term of imprisonment. These two offices have seemed to come to very different conclusions. Why is that?
Well, this came out during his sentencing or in the weeks before his sentencing. The Southern District did say that, you know, they believe Mueller's office when they say that Michael Cohen provided substantial assistance. And they did say that. The special counsel's prosecutors said that he was very helpful. At the same time, Southern District said he did not choose to cooperate until it was very close to the end. And secondly, he chose not to take a formal cooperation deal. This is complicated, but in the Southern District of New York, the way this typically works is you have to come clean about everything you've ever done, any crime you've ever committed. Otherwise, you can't be a cooperator in that traditional sense. And Michael Cohen said it was because he wanted to begin. He knew he was going to go to prison. It was going to happen soon. He had to get it done with. He didn't want to go through this whole process. You can read into whatever you want for that. People certainly have. He's a, you know, guy with a long career involving some shady businesses. and in and around New York and elsewhere. He chose not to cooperate fully, and that's why he's getting 3 years.
Amy, when we say 3 years, potentially, what could that realistically look like for someone like Michael Cohen? Are we talking about a potential for a reduced sentence, for good behavior? Are we talking about low security prison? Like, what is this actually going to look like for Cohen?
We're talking about a low security prison, most likely. The Bureau of Prisons makes a recommendation in that regard. And we're talking about something less than 3 years, but probably not much. There's not much reduction for good behavior in the federal system.
Well, there's a lot to pay attention to today, so we appreciate both of you coming in. Attorney Amy Sabrin and Rebecca Davis O'Brien with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks to you both on this big day.
Thank you.
Thank you.